So, okay, I'm here to talk to you all about big changes in the data analytics space, right? Hopefully you'll walk away with an appreciation for what these, you know, shifts in technology are doing, you know, broadly within industry and how that can be applied to the public health space. You know, I'm passionate about it, so hopefully that comes across and you come away with some appreciation for how important these developments are and how they can affect the way you design data systems. No financial disclosures to present. Okay, a little bit about my background, why I'm qualified to give this talk. I have led, shaped, architected a number of large engagements dealing with big data, including a system that analyzed every transaction at Best Buy against over 1,000 different financial analytics, implemented a predictive analytics capability at United Health Group that looked to predict patients' future cost of healthcare. And so that was very interesting. We analyzed claim histories on over 60 million patients. Several other engagements, but and I also spend a lot of time, I currently lead up a lot of work for us at the CDC. Learning objectives. In no particular order, this is what I hope to convey here. We're going to get technical. It's the HIT section, so there's actually a little pseudocode here. But the idea is that we'll come away with a real appreciation, not just hyper buzz, but a real appreciation for what the fundamental shift here that is taking place through big data technology. So that's really where we're going with this. Okay. So we're in a new era of data, right? Everyone sort of sees it and feels it every day, right? If you've done a Google search, you interact with enormous data sets daily, and we know how they're changing our world. These are a few statistics about just how shocking the amount of data that we're generating is. Right, a million transactions an hour. If anyone here has designed a system to handle large amounts of data, you know, a million transactions an hour is a shocking figure. But there are even more shocking figures there about Twitter and others. These are just some examples. You know, this has been the fundamental challenge of IT over the last decade. Right, it's designing systems to deal with this vast growth of data. You're not going to be able to upgrade your way out of these problems. This isn't a more RAM kind of problem, right? This is this represents a fundamental shift in the way we need to design systems. It has direct applicability to health, of course, you know, with decoding the human genome, and we're going to talk about some other applicable use cases within the public health space as well. So this infographic gives you a little bit more scale on just what we're talking about here, right? Data is growing dramatically. This is all sourced from an IDC study. But data is growing. It's roughly doubling every 18 to 24 months, right? The sum total of all human data, which is, you know, they have some pretty fantastic figures there by 2020. I'll point, you know, to the tiny sliver, which is 2009, right? If you think about systems that were designed since 2009, those are pretty modern systems, right? And then you think about the systems that were built with technology back in the 80s, and they're wholly unprepared for this growth in data. Now, not every data set is growing that way, but I'm going to argue that the ones that take most advantage of this explosion in data are ones that are aware of it and are designed to handle that growth in data and to access those new sources of information. What they say, you know, systems age like fish and data ages like wine, right? So it's really a matter of amassing large data sets that you can do something with, right? But we all deal with the challenges of structure and performance and many others with making good use out of that. So really, these technologies have broken those barriers away, but they come with some constraints. Okay. So I'm just highlighting, right, what we're using day to day, which I'm sure by a show of hands, who uses relational technology in their work, relational databases? Okay, right. That technology was developed in the 70s, wholly different era and time of data. So this graphic paints a picture of how this data is growing, right? So AT&T call records data, and no, this is a log scale, right? It's large, right, but and growing, right, but they've been able to use conventional database sharding techniques and sort of upgrading their way out of the problem of large data. But when you start to talk about the problems that companies like Google here in San Francisco, CERN, doing physics analytics, are facing, it's a whole new scale, right? Again, log scale, right? So they have to systematize what was a hard problem for AT&T. They have to make that a normal state of operation, right? Scaling not to 2 or 10 or 15 servers. Back in 2005, you know, Google doesn't release this data, but their clusters were rumored to be on the range of 100,000 servers. Today, it's, I'm sure, many times that. So this is really showing you that a different approach is needed fundamentally. And I'd argue the majority of our applications need to be going towards that upper right-hand quadrant. In public health, they're really not necessarily, not in general. There are a few interesting new applications. Okay, so what is this, right? You know, there's three main frontiers that I'm defining, and there's a lot of hype and buzz around this area, but that I'm defining as big data technology. It's enabling the efficient storage and query of immense data sets, execution of computationally intense algorithms on the data, and then, you know, most importantly, I think, is the combination, comparison, and sharing of large data sets. So you're really no longer talking about keeping data within your own firewalls and in a structured and proprietary database format, but allowing data to flow more easily and cross-analyze data sets that are potentially very difficult and very large to analyze. This technology is bringing the barriers to doing that much lower. Okay, so what is it more rigorously, right? It's the main difference, right, is at the infrastructure layer, right? You know, conventional approaches use monolithic hardware, mainframes, big servers, right? It's really about the transition to distributed hardware. Cloud technology is a great example of that. And cloud technology has once again lowered that barrier within the infrastructure space, where now with a credit card you can sign up and spin up a 100 machine cluster on Amazon for, you know, a few dollars. Something that would have been tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, even 5 years ago. On top of this, we have, I'm going to contrast two different stacks, right? The traditional relational database, it actually does work a little bit with distributed infrastructure, right? There are approaches, database sharding, that go into that space, right? But that technology was fundamentally not designed to handle distributed hardware as a matter of course, as a normal way of operation. And so it's hard. It takes people like CSC to figure that out, and it's very expensive. And so as a result, only the biggest enterprises typically use it. In contrast, big data technology really is built on a foundation of MapReduce. There are others, but the fundamental pattern is one of that's very similar to MapReduce, and we'll talk a little bit more about what MapReduce is and how it's important. There's a number of tools out there that implement MapReduce, including Hadoop, which is open source. Sitting on top of MapReduce, you can use MapReduce as a framework directly, but it's a programming framework. It's not going to represent a familiar data interface. On top of that, there's a number of libraries out there, MongoDB, Cassandra, Hive, many others, there's dozens now, that present a very similar interface to your conventional relational database. There's some considerations, and we'll talk about those, but you know, this doesn't have to be big or scary or represent this huge learning curve. That's part of what this is bringing, is that it's lowering the amount of knowledge and expertise you need to implement these systems that access very large data sets. The fundamental difference here is, as data grows, right, I can simply add more machines to this cluster within a big data architecture. It's completely transparent to the end user. You have to do nothing. You know, if you're using Amazon, it will do it automatically for you. BioSense has a great example of how that works. They actually scale up the number of machines, even for one particular query, based on the amount of load and the amount of data that they have to look at. But then within the monolithic space, you run out of options, right? You can only add so much RAM, so much disk. Very quickly, these problems grow beyond even the largest machines. So MapReduce. Fundamentally, so in 2004, Google described it in a published paper on MapReduce, and it was really important what they did there. They basically gave away the secret sauce a little bit, right? I mean, this is the fundamental pattern behind Google, okay? And what it is it, at its most fundamental, most basic, it defines two functions. There's the pseudocode right there. It defines a map function and a reduce function. Those two functions are designed in a way that they're trivial to distribute onto any number of machines, okay? Now, there's a lot of framework code and whatnot that handles that complexity for you. And the beauty is that as an implementer, you don't have to worry about that, right? You just have to worry about those two steps. I'm not going to go into detail about what those two steps are, but basically they're dealing with initially looking at a lot of data in the map function and then reduce answering a specific question. And it's fundamental, it is dealing with partial problems. The big takeaway here, though, is that this pattern and this framework, it forces programmers to write embarrassingly parallel code. If anyone has done any work in the distributed code space and distributed algorithm space, it's hard. It is really, really hard. And what Google has done with this framework is they've made it easy. And every single one of their applications is written against this pattern and framework. And this is the heart of what powers your Google search, your Gmail, and many of their other technologies. Some of the key differences, I'm not going to drain this, but I'm going to call out a couple of important ones. ACID compliance, right? So it's talking about the transaction durability and independence of a relational transaction versus a big data or NoSQL technology transaction. In big data technology, that becomes harder, right? So you typically have to make some trade-offs there. It's not usually very important for a data analytics system. It's more important if you were going to build a trading system with this technology. Of course, easy to scale. We've talked about this. Other big consideration is no joins, right? So you all who are doing work with relational technology will be very familiar with doing a join to merge two data sets. You do that in a different way, and so you don't necessarily have that ability using many of these big data tools. But what you get for that, right, is a lot of power, right? Of course, the ability to scale, right? We're not talking about limits of terabytes. We're talking about limits of petabytes or exabytes, right? Truly enormous amounts of data. We're going to talk about in a couple of slides how that can apply to public health. You're talking about not just querying data, but doing predictive analytics, right? So doing Bayesian analysis, cluster analysis, recommender systems, right? And we all see this, Amazon recommending books to us, right? Why aren't we applying that technology to healthcare problems, to public health? It's very, very anemic in terms of that application in public health as of today. It really needs to be much, much higher. That top bullet, transitioning from a single source of truth to multiple perspectives of data. That's a nice way of saying dealing with dirty data, right? There isn't one single source of truth. I mean, you know, sort of represents reality a little bit more, in that, you know, you have data sets from many different spaces, and they may be clean, they may be dirty, right? But there's still value to be extracted from that data. You know, something as dirty as search terms, literally an empty text box on the internet. Google has been able to pull some very powerful insights and better some enormous investments that the federal government has made in disease surveillance technology. Okay, so that's the differences at sum. What can you all do with this technology? How does it apply to your everyday world? What are the types of problems we should be looking to solve with this? So I was talking a little bit about Google, right? The dirtiest data known to man, an empty search box that people are just typing into. And they've been able to correlate, and many of you are probably familiar with Google flu trends, right? It's based on search terms, right? Literally nothing more than search terms. They've statistically correlated this model, right, with official CDC data, and are now able to predict flu outbreaks at a regional, at a city level even, many weeks ahead of official sources. So really shifted dramatically the way we do flu surveillance. The wild thing is last year they were able to segment that data set for dengue. And they said, well, in certain areas, people search for slightly different terms, you know, when they're coming down with dengue. And we can actually determine when it's flu and when it's dengue based on nothing more than what the aggregate population is putting in that search box. It's really amazing to take away. And I think what it highlights is just the tremendous value that's sitting out there in data now, right? Who would have thought that we would have, you know, obsolesced all syndromic surveillance data to date by looking at nothing more than search terms? Okay. So another example, looking at discarded EKG data, literally just deleted off the machines, okay? At MIT, a couple of physicians had a hunch that there were patterns they weren't seeing that predicted death. And what they were able to do is find three new markers looking at that data of new predictors that were very subtle, right, and that to the human eye were very difficult to pull out, right, but now are revolutionizing the way that we detect a readmission for a heart attack. This information is only just now being put into clinical practice. So those are just two examples. There are many others. Foundation Health is doing this work with genomics, where they're mapping your own sequenced human genome against thousands of varieties of cancer. We know that cancer diagnosis and treatment is all really oriented around biologic treatments now. And so rather than a scattershot approach of trying various biologics against your various breeds of cancer, they are now able to find exactly the gene malformities via big data analytics, things that computationally were just not possible 5 years ago. Use cases in public health, syndromic surveillance, it's an obvious one, you know, cohort studies, genomics, bioinformatics. We don't typically work with genomics and bioinformatics every day, but, you know, I would argue that there's potentially a whole new emerging world there that we can delve into as public health professionals. I noticed there's actually another talk on the agenda at APHA this year on that. Big data sources, these are just a couple, right? Something as wild as a Twitter feed might yield a lot of value out there, from injury prevention to syndromic surveillance. So I'd really encourage you all to look at those sets of big data out there that you can access, right? And they may hold some truths that are just waiting to be discovered. And I'll leave with this quote, from Gartner: information really is the oil of the 21st century. This stuff's valuable, and this technology lowers that bar for all of us to work with it. And hopefully, we can do a lot more work with it in the public health space. So with that, Any questions? Great. We can do questions at the end as well, but
we are short on time.
We're short on time? Okay, great. Well, thank y'all.